So welcome to Dona Doggy Temple of Lion's Roar Dharma Center. I'm Marie Gillis, and I'm one of Lama Jinpa's students. And I have been one of Lama's students. This is my 10-year anniversary. This year. So it's a very auspicious year for me, a very blessed year. I feel very privileged to have had this journey. So... And I'm really glad that you're all here on your journey as well. Is anybody new? Never been to the temple before? Oh, welcome. Welcome. Very nice to see you. So glad you're here. You guys are the whole reason that we're here. We exist because all of you exist. And we want you to have a safe and beautiful and welcoming and joyful place to come be part of a community of people who are all working together toward the same thing, to make a safe and beautiful, joyful, peaceful world for all beings. And that's what we're all about. So welcome. I'm just so glad that everybody came. So you may have noticed I'm not Lama Jinpa. This is not his week to teach. He'll be teaching next Sunday. Students alternate with Lama Jinpa so that he can get a little bit of a break because he also works like 12 hours a day in his therapy office over on Alhambra. So again, thank you very, very much for coming. Let's go ahead and begin with some opening prayers. I guess we'll go ahead and just get started. Does everybody have one of these prayer books? Perfect. We're going to be doing opening prayers in the prayer book starting on page 3 with praise to Shakyamuni Buddha. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. When you, chief of humans, were born, you took 7 steps on this great earth, and you said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise at that time, I prostrate. Completely pure body, supremely fine form, ocean of wisdom like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the 3 worlds, supreme protector, to you I prostrate. Endowed with the supreme marks, a face like the stainless moon, a color like gold, to you I pay homage. The 3 worlds are not like you, who is free from dust. Matchless one, endowed with knowledge, to you I prostrate. Protector endowed with great compassion, omniscient teacher, field of ocean-like merits and good qualities, to the thus gone I prostrate. Through purity, free from attachment, through virtue, releases from the evil gone realms, unique, supreme, ultimate meaning, to the Dharma that brings peace, I prostrate. From freedom, teaching the path, well abiding in the pure trainings, holy field endowed with good qualities, To the Sangha also I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha. Homage to the Dharma refuge. Homage to the great Sangha. To all three ever devout homage. To all worthy of respect. Bowing with bodies as many as all realms' atoms in all aspects, with supreme faith I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous action. Accumulate virtue and goodness. Subdue your own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, illusions, drops of dew, bubbles, dreams, lightning and clouds, look at all conditioned phenomena as such. Due to this merit, having attained the state of the all-seeing, and thereby subduing the enemy of faults, may I liberate migrators from the ocean of existence, stirred by the waves of aging, sickness, and death. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge until I am enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant. Respectfully, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I confess all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtuous actions of all ordinary and noble beings. Please, Buddha, remain as our guide, and turn the wheel of Dharma until samsara ends. Through the merit created by myself and others, may the two bodhicittas ripen, and may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. This offering I make of a precious jewel mandala, together with other pure offerings and wealth, and the virtues we have collected throughout the three times with our body, speech, and mind. O my masters, my yidams, and the three precious jewels, I offer all to you with unwavering faith. Accepting these out of your boundless compassion, please send forth waves of your blessings. Iram Guru Ratna Mandalakam Nuyatayam. I will read the Heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. I prostrate to the Arya Triple Gem. Thus did I hear it one time. The Bhagavan was dwelling on Massive Vultures Mountain, on Rajagriha, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the Katagazar phenomena called profound perception. Also at that time, the bodhisattva Mahasattva, Arya Avalokiteshvara, looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then, through the power of Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said this to the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara: how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that. And the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, said this to the Venerable Shariputra: Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly, beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty. Emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form. Form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. There is no eye element, and so on, and up to, and including, no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, and up to, and including, no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the endpoint of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly, completely awaken to unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering should be known as the truth, since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared, Tayata gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhisoha. Shariputra, the bodhisattva, mahasattva, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom just as you have indicated. Even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan, having thus spoken, the Venerable Sharadvadiputra, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the world of gods, humans, Asuras, and Gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan. Well, welcome again. And thank you again for coming on this warm and smoky, sunny Sunday. If you just joined us, my name is Marie Gillis, and I'm one of Lama Jinpa's students. And I'm going to be doing the talk today, and just kind of to begin with, just so you know, I'm not like giving this talk because I have any sort of like special realization or anything like that. I am like all of you. I'm a student and a beginner. And really the information that all of us who are students of Lamas who speak, we're giving to you information that we've learned from Lama Law and from our other lineage teachers. So we just happen to have the privilege to come up here and take a swing at it and do our very best. And it's a privilege to to be able to share the Dharma. And what we're really doing is we're sharing the Dharma with you, our brothers and sisters, where we're at, like right now, in our place on the path. And so, like, if you come to me 3 years from now and say, hey, Marie, remember that talk you gave in July of 2018 on equanimity? Do you want to talk about that again? I might have, like, a different perspective because things are always changing. But this is my understanding of the Dharma right now under the guidance of my dear Lama, Lama Jinpa. So, again, I'm not, it's not like I'm, you know, coming from a place of omniscience or anything like that. I can guarantee you, and I know, it's so disappointing. It's like, no, you're not omniscient. That's a lot of responsibility. I don't know if I want to be. So today's talk is on equanimity. And it's a term you hear a lot, actually all the time, in Buddhism in general. In our lineage of Buddhism, certainly. In fact, every time you say, you know, like daily prayers or opening prayers, there's the four Brahma Viharas, right? The four measurables. May all sentient beings have happiness, the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that's free from suffering. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant. Sorry, always get choked up. So we hear about equanimity as the fourth Brahma Vihara, and it does, it comes up in every teaching. Every teacher emphasizes equanimity. Every teacher speaks of it. Many of the prayers speak of it. People pray to be in a state of equanimity. And the reason that I asked Lama to do this talk and on this subject is because equanimity is a huge part of the Tonglen practice that I do, which is a form of meditation called sending and receiving, giving and taking, where you are exchanging the suffering, the confusion, the pain of other beings for your own clarity, wisdom, compassion, insight, loving kindness, and equanimity. So I became, and as a Tonglen practitioner who really believes that's one of the ways we're going to bring about world peace and a more enlightened society, as I thought more about equanimity and really started to meditate on it, along with, of course, the cultivation of compassion and empathy that we hear about so much and a lot of us get very, very focused on, very rightfully so, empathy really started to come up more and more and kind of realizing how that fits into the picture. As Buddhists, we do talk a lot about, you know, we're cultivating compassion. We're cultivating love and loving kindness. And we don't hear as much specifically about equanimity and what that's all about. So that's why I really wanted to study it more in depth and talk about it, because just the little bit of practice and study I've done so far has really led me to see that it's key to this whole process of truly awakening and truly being able to help all other beings and create this, you know, great Shambhala enlightened society that we want. And don't worry if I, like, say things that are confusing or if you have questions and stuff, we'll have question and answer and discussion time, too. So I asked Lama, so, okay, you're giving me permission. I asked him permission to speak on equanimity, and I'm like, so what would you like me to cover? He goes, well, you're going to see that it is a huge subject. And he asked me to start with, like, just some real basics, kind of real nitty-gritty basic definitions. Some of these are really things that you learn as part of the Dharma. Some of them are kind of more psychological, but they all go together and will kind of work together to kind of help you not only understand equanimity and the practices that lead up to it, but kind of some strategies and pitfalls for kind of not getting off balance on the way while you're getting there. So equanimity is actually a state. We talk about different states in Buddhism, you know, relative states, ultimate states. And, you know, of course, complete awakening is an ultimate state. And equanimity is a state. It's a relative state, one that is, it kind of exists because of causes and conditions, because of other things and in relation to other things. But unlike, like, samsara that we're all existing in now, which is also a relative state, equanimity is extremely refined and extremely subtle. It is a very, very, very fine view of other beings and other phenomena, where all beings are utterly equal in our view. This is much deeper than, you know, even if you are like me, you're a passionate civil rights activist, it's deeper than that. It isn't like a feeling or something that, you know, kind of brings up like, I'm going to do these things. Equanimity simply is. It is a view in a state of perfect balance with absolutely no bias whatsoever. So it is completely balanced, completely steady, doesn't waver because there's nothing to waver. And again, it's still a relative state, because it's dependent on causes and conditions, and you'll see how that works. But again, it's extremely refined, and it is the state that we have to enter into in order to enter into the final ultimate state, which is, you know, complete direct realization of emptiness, complete awareness. And I am finding, even at my very, very beginning stage, that this is extremely difficult practice. It is very, very challenging practice. We're always wanting to give, like, compassion and love, sympathetic joy. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I can do this. But equanimity is a little bit different. Because being in a place where you really, really are viewing all beings as utterly equal, utterly the same as yourself, utterly the same as one another, our very beginner and relative minds really struggle with that. And you may be a passionate Buddhist practitioner, but, and it just, again, it's very hard. You may be sincerely wishing for all sentient beings to be liberated, and then kind of in the back somewhere you're going, yeah, except my boss is just such a jerk. And it's like, it's not even something you're consciously aware of. It just kind of sneaks in there, right? Because we're deluded, and we're really struggling. It's hard. You may say in your mind, oh, I truly believe that all sentient beings are Buddhas and all sentient beings have Buddha nature, except for her, because she really makes me mad. And she was a jerk to me, and I'm not even going to deal with that. So in our beginner's minds, we're always, there's always part of us that's saying, but, you know, all sentient beings, but that person. But I got so upset at this. So it's really, really, really challenging to get to a place where you're not making exceptions. I mean, it is, I will tell you from personal experience, one of the things I struggle the most with is Schadenfreude. It's a really wonderful German term which refers to the feeling you get when someone you perceive as an enemy has some sort of misfortune. So a good example is like,
certain presidents having to not make trips to certain cities because people in that city were ready to stage massive protests. And it's like the Schadenfreude is, oh yeah, that's so awesome. And equanimity. You can't go there. We see differences. We make exceptions. And in equanimity, there are no differences and there are no exceptions at all. Again, equanimity just is. It's like space, right? Space doesn't say, I'm close to this desk, but I'm far away from Brian, right? Space just is. It's just there. The sun doesn't shine on pick and choose, right? The sun doesn't pick and choose. The sun doesn't say, well, I'm going to shine on Milwaukee, but I'm not going to shine on Farmington, right? The sun just shines. It doesn't make decisions. It just shines on everything. A mirror, right? It's like a mirror. Mirrors don't pick and choose what they reflect. Mirrors simply reflect everything equally, without exception. So none of those things pick and choose. There's no bias. There's no choice. And that's what equanimity is like. You are trying to enter into a state where, again, all of those things are perfectly in balance, and you're just interested. You see differences. You can recognize they're there, but you aren't making choices, and you aren't making exceptions. Hard. Very, very hard. So this is incredibly challenging because real equanimity, this very refined equanimity, has to actually come from like an ultimate view of no self, right? That, you know, I am not this permanent, unwavering, fixed being that never changes, that, you know, it has to come from a place of understanding that we don't exist in a fixed way permanently. Other things do not exist in permanent ways. They are not fixed. So true equanimity has to come from that place. It's the only way you're going to get to that place where you're not labeling things, reacting, and, you know, putting up those barriers and saying this but not that. And of course, realizing that place where things don't have their inherent existence, which is really emptiness, realizing things are empty of inherent existence, takes a lot of really deep practice, a lot of patience on our part, but patience is really good to develop, and equanimity takes a lot of it. And this really, it also really requires a strong willingness to be really honest with yourself about your biases and to abandon them. Once we start to do that, we're on our way to true balance. But it is really, really hard. We're usually so stuck in kind of our normal relative view of things that it is sometimes shockingly easy to get thrown completely off balance. Like someone threatens your misperceived sense of self, right? Whatever it is, they frustrate you, they argue with you, and suddenly, you know, your self-cherishing mind of, you know, thinking that you are a big deal and everything takes over, and then you start reacting from ignorance and you lose your balance. It can be really, really hard not to take that bait and run with it. I have a recent example from my own life. Not going to mention any specific names or anything, but had an experience last week right here where I was meeting briefly with Lama and another person, and an argument began in front of Lama. It was very bad. I'm just making a little aside right here, you guys. You do not argue in front of Lama. I allowed another person who I know is suffering. We are all suffering. I allowed myself to go off balance. I allowed myself to react from a place of completely unconscious ignorance. And I just went with it, you know? And it's like I was telling Lama this week, I'm like, the whole thing took less than 90 seconds. The whole thing took less. It happens like that, you guys. But when I look back at it, and I look at the cascade of like things that took place in my mind, you know, all the narratives that immediately kicked into place, that just shot me right into that self-cherishing place of, you can't say that, and I'm right. And I'm telling you guys, I really did. I picked the bait. I ran with it. I was ready to run as far as I needed to in order to be right. And thank goodness, my Lama said, no, enough. And he booted us out of the office. Well, if you were here, he a little more than booted us. But he was right to do that. And the great thing about this was, it was a huge error, and I honestly, you guys, I know I'm kind of like, oh, you know, but it was a huge error. But in a way, karmically, the timing was fortuitous because it gave me an additional meditation on equanimity. How could I have been more balanced? What view should I have been holding in that moment? And reminded me that, like, you know what? You've done a lot of work on this. There's still more work to do. Now, the beautiful thing about that is that knowing that, I was able to go back to Lama and say, well, gosh, this is what happened. This is my understanding of what happened. This is what kind of meditation and practice I'm going to do to try and make sure it doesn't occur again and do my very best. So, again, this is tough, tough practice. And it's one of those things where you'll feel like you're taking a couple steps forward and then the gravel gets kind of slippery and you slide back a little bit. But you just keep taking those steps forward and you'll see progress over time. You will. And it's called a practice for a reason. You cannot develop these very subtle states without putting in a lot of effort and maybe making some mistakes on the way. But there's remedy for the mistakes. And we have these incredible teachers who are willing to give us the information to help us get past them. Bless you. Okay? So, yeah. So, right now, we're kind of all reacting from that real beginner's mind, that really relative mind, and are trying to develop these much more subtle minds. And the Brahma Viharas kind of go in an order where you're developing compassion, empathy, sympathetic joy, and then equanimity. And they kind of build one on another. You want to start with a kind of a really very relative, almost intellectual sense of equanimity to begin with in order to develop the very fine one. So you really just kind of want to start with the thought, okay, yes, all beings are the same. All beings are like me. We all suffer. We all have you know, pain. We all want the same things. We all want to be free from suffering. So that's a very basic intellectual form of equanimity that, you know, we all want, all have pain. We all want to be free of suffering. We all are Buddhas, and we all deserve enlightenment. So that's the kind of very relative form of equanimity you start with. But how do you get past all of those feelings like, well, but maybe not so-and-so? You want to cultivate other qualities, like compassion and empathy. So we're going to talk about those as well. Because a lot of times people, when they think about, especially like when they're doing Tonglen, they think about compassion and empathy, and particularly when they kind of combine them together, and they think they're the same as equanimity, but they're not. And people often think of compassion and empathy as being kind of the same, and they're not. So it's really valuable to talk about the terms, especially from a Buddhist perspective, so that we can understand the difference. So compassion is an active interest or desire to relieve yourself or others from suffering. So it's an active interest or desire to do something to relieve other people from their suffering or yourself. And empathy is an active interest in understanding the suffering of yourself and others. Does that make sense? So those are really deep and subtle practices on their own. But can you see how kind of, if we can develop compassion, that desire, like, oh my gosh, you know, people are suffering so much. I want to help them. And say, well, I need to understand their suffering so I can help them the best way I can, be the best helper I can. Do you see how that could kind of support being able to come to a place where you say, and you know, everybody's suffering the same. It is just like me. And everybody deserves to be liberated from this. So one kind of leads to the other, and then they're also kind of simultaneously all support one another. Does that make sense? It's easy, right? So, again, with compassion and empathy, there's a difference. In one, you're seeking an understanding of a being state. And in the other one, your interest is actually in taking an action to change that state that they are in. So cultivating empathy can be a really important motivator and then can help us to cultivate compassion and eventually bodhicitta, which is really the spirit of awakening. So far, that's kind of some way we talk about stuff from kind of a Dharma perspective. And then Lalong actually shared some stuff with me that are more, some things that are more psychological terms and concepts, but they're actually super helpful with these practices. When you're doing compassion and empathy practices like Tonglen, Tonglen is literally a meditation practice where you are kind of, you're inhaling the suffering and pain and ignorance and anger and all of that of other beings, and you exhale to them compassion and empathy and joy and love and support and, you know, all of your wealth and well-being and good karma. And a lot of times people get kind of a little bit lost and off balance in that process. Sometimes they kind of feel like maybe they're becoming like a storehouse for bad stuff, or they're going to become depleted by doing these practices. So one of the things I wanted to talk about was while you're doing them, so we can build these as being very strong, and so you can build those super subtle states of empathy and equanimity and compassion. We'll talk about some things that will help you not get worn out along the way and help you stay strong. And these are kind of potential maybe pitfalls sometimes as well. So we talked about compassion and empathy, and like empathy is where we're, you know, trying to understand the suffering of others and what they're going through. There's also identification. And identification is where we look at ourselves and we identify similar situations and feelings in other people. And now, depending on how we're doing this, it can be helpful or unhelpful. It is really good and really important that we identify that we have similar thoughts and feelings to others, right? Because that's how we develop empathy and compassion, you know? So that when, you know, I mean, just basic things, someone's loved one dies, you can go up and say, oh, I've been sad too, you know? I lost someone too. So it's really good when it's done consciously. It helps you to cultivate empathy. We can see those things in ourselves and come to some understanding of it. The issue arises when it's unconscious, when you're not really thinking about it and not being in the moment when you're reacting. When you're unconscious about it, different things can happen. You can become really swept up, you know, like in someone's emotional state, like someone's really spinning out and you just get like really swept up in it. That's really easy to have happen. That happens when you have arguments. It happens when you kind of go along with some kind of like crazy situation. So, you know, again, you're not thinking, so you get swept up, or you start saying things like, oh, I know exactly how you feel. No, you don't. You don't know exactly how anyone feels ever. Saying that, it's insensitive and it's insulting. On the conventional level, the details of our suffering differ. So, you know, and it may be, you know, maybe the two of you were abused as children, but you're talking to someone and you're both abused as children, but you can't ever say, I know exactly what you're going through, because the details are different. And because we are in this very relative beginner place, it can be really hurtful to hear someone say, I know exactly what you're going through, when, you know, they didn't have the exact same experiences. So on a conventional level, the details differ. So it's important to be conscious of that and not say things like, I know exactly how you feel. Saying things like, oh, something like that happened to me too, might be a better way to express yourself. However, on an ultimate level, right, we know we're all suffering in samsara. We all know we are really, the root of all of our suffering is confusion and desire and hatred. We know we all suffer from a misperceived sense of self and a fixed notion of ourselves, from that self-cherishing that's kind of like clinging to everything. And that understanding, that really more profound understanding, is where you really begin to cultivate empathy and compassion, sympathetic joy, and then ultimately can realize that really subtle state of equanimity. So there's kind of, you know, two things happening. There's, you know, conventional world and ultimate world. And it's hard practice because you have to consider both at the same time. And again, the beautiful thing is when you finally get to that final state of equanimity, it's all the same, right? So you can see it all very evenly. Before then, you have to really stay in a conscious place. Does that all make sense so far? Some other stuff that happens is, so like when we say things like, I know exactly how you feel, it's actually called mirroring. And again, without consciousness or real understanding, it's totally superficial. And that's why to the other person it feels so insulting and so insensitive, because it just kind of shows you haven't put a lot of thought into stuff. Really what you're doing when you say that is you're identifying your own feelings, not somebody else's. So it ends up being all about you. And that's not merging. And merging is another thing that you can do. And merging, in a way, is kind of what happens when you're doing Tonglen practice, when you are exchanging yourself for others, when you are trying to come to a very deep understanding of the suffering and pain of others, exchange it for your joy and your compassion and your good karma and all of that stuff. Merging is healthy as long as when you emerge, you maintain your identity and you come out stronger, right? So you're doing Tonglen practice and you come out and you are still, you know, you're still Marie Gillis, you know, Dharma student in Sacramento, and you are filled with joy and confidence because, you know, you've been able for these 6 minutes to help beings. It isn't good or healthy if you emerge as the other person. So like you're doing Tonglen for something and taking in your suffering, and you either kind of emerge and you're like, oh, you're in their mental state, or you just kind of stay stuck on it, like you can't quit thinking about it. When that happens, that means there's actually been a loss of boundaries. So it's really important at that moment, and again, since we're beginners, this can be really challenging. This is why we have teachers. But it's really important in that moment to kind of examine the true nature of self. So who are you when you enter that experience versus who you are when you come out? Are they the same or are they different? So, and that actually leads us to boundaries. Even for Buddhists, boundaries are a really, really important subject. In fact, Lama Jinpa and another wonderful teacher, a nun named Venerable Tenzin Chukyi, just did a workshop called Compassionate Boundaries, and they're going to be doing a few more workshops kind of the same nature at the end of last month. Here and boundaries are really, really important. Even as Buddhists, often as Buddhists, we hear things like we should always be, you know, open and available to other beings, and we hear about interdependence, and we truly do wish to completely relieve the suffering of all beings and help them and be available to them. All of that is true. All of that is good, but even as Buddhists, or any sort of like person who really wants to be a helper, you have to have healthy and conscious boundaries in order for any of this to work. If you don't, you're going to become tired and resentful and angry, and your practice isn't going to be on track. It's going to be off balance, and you're not going to be coming from a place that is balanced and clear. Again, often in Tonglen or the other compassion practices, people do feel like they're kind of becoming a storage for bad energy, or they become kind of sullied or maybe dirtied somehow, or that they're just being, by sending their compassion to others, they're just completely being depleted and like a battery that's been totally discharged, and they, you know, they're going to get tired and stuff. And when stuff that like that happens, again, it's because there's been some loss of boundaries. So you can avoid that by understanding some of the stuff we just talked about that I just mentioned, and as a way to kind of create and maintain healthy boundaries while you're doing your practice. And creating those healthy boundaries are going to be able to help you more quickly be able to develop those more refined mind streams. So you don't have those little ignorant voices popping up going, well, you know, all except for that person in the White House, you know? So really important. And healthy boundaries aren't walls, right? There are lots of different kinds of boundaries. So healthy boundaries absolutely aren't walls. They're more like just like a dividing line or a margin between things, right? Like the rug here has a boundary, has a margin line. But like when you walk up to it, you don't go, you just get smacked back, right? Boundaries that we're talking about, they're dynamic and fluid, and they have to be, because things and people, phenomena are always changing. It's always in a state of flux. In fact, that's one of the things that our kind of deluded minds reacts to, is that stuff changing. So your boundaries have to kind of remain dynamic and fluid. If they're too rigid, you're going to get off balance. So you have to allow things to be permeable so you can be open to other people. So you know, like a cell wall is permeable. Stuff can pass in and out of a cell wall, all of that stuff. Our boundaries right now tend to be around self and not self. There's me and there's everything else. So through these practices and through having healthy boundaries and kind of refining our view, we will be able to come to a place where it isn't just me and then everything else. It's just going to be everything. So if we merge, like we just talked about, but we lose that sense of who we are, we'll lose that sense of boundaries. So if we aren't checking in regularly again, asking, well, who is doing this and why, in that moment, you'll get into trouble because you're going to get lost. You're going to go down some side road that you didn't intend to go down. So you have to kind of make sure that the boundary is clear. The compassion is still completely energetic. You just know that there's a clear boundary. That, you know, you are going to give them all of your goodwill and loving kindness. And you're not going to hang on to, you know, hatred and anger and ignorance, all of that. So again, the compassion is there, but it has a boundary. So again, if you want your practice to remain healthy, you need to ask who's doing it. And you also need to ask why. Because motivations are really important in maintaining healthy boundaries and making sure that those little commentaries don't pop up. So why are you doing these practices? If you're doing it from like an exchange motivation, expecting something in return for cultivating compassion or doing practice for someone, that's unhealthy. That's self-cherishing. And this is one of those places where you really have to be honest with yourself. It's like, are you doing practice for someone because you see them and you find their suffering to be unbearable? Or do you find their suffering to be unbearable and you wish they would just leave you alone? Or do you, I mean, because, you know, sometimes it's like you're doing practice because it's like, oh, I'm just such a good Buddhist. So it's important, you guys, because this is important. We are liberating all beings and creating this incredible interdependent and enlightened community. So the only way to do that is to really kind of develop that state where we get past the solid boundaries and become more permeable and smart and present and conscious, so that we can really do things for the right reasons and be the most effective helpers we can be. And by constantly doing that, it will also reduce your own self-cherishing, your own fixed notion of who and what you are. It's almost inevitable if you allow the boundaries to remain fluid and permeable, right? because if things are going like this, you can't be like here if things are going like this, right? You have to kind of go along with everything. Because it's all right there. And eventually you're going to get to a point where you're not just going along, because it is all just there. If you're coming from that place, that fixed place, the practice will be all about boundaries. It's all going to be about a fixation on self. So there's going to be no permeability, no openness, and that is codependency. Where you have unhealthy boundaries, unhealthy motives, and it ends up being all about you. So what we're really trying to do is refine those mind states so they really are about other beings, while keeping, again, our own good health and well-being in mind. Both of those things have to happen. If you're coming from an altruistic place, you know, that place where you really do wish for all beings to be free and happy, and it's not mired in that kind of misperceived notion of who you are, your practice is going to be healthy and realistic. You're going to see, you're going to be able to identify progress. And that's going to be little. But that's the beautiful thing, though, is you'll be able to actually see the progress happening. And you'll really be able to open to other beings and really cultivate compassion and empathy, sympathetic joy. So it's about that willingness to just kind of remain open, but remain healthy, and be honest with yourself. And I know this part of it may seem really nuts and bolts, but I know it like helps me to kind of try and like know what sorts of things typically can come up for students. You know, the common stuff that happens, because we all think that our path is like totally unique and like, oh gosh, this has never happened to anybody else in the history of Dharma practice for 2,500 years. And I can guarantee you there's probably like 17 people in this room going through the exact same thing right now. So we all go through the same stuff. So for me, it's exciting to be able to learn about what to do when it happens, and then to be able to share like my experiences and what I found out with you guys. Because otherwise we can just find ourselves spinning our wheels in ordinary mind, and we never get anywhere, and we end up actually causing more problems for ourselves and others than we solve. So, yeah, so really important. So again, what does all of that have to do with equanimity? Again, even though the states in the four Brahma Haridas, including equanimity, are relative, they're really, really subtle. So we're trying to develop this subtle state and hold a really subtle view, but right now we don't have not so subtle minds and views. So again, understanding the nuts and bolts and the basics, before we really kind of jump in and start trying to do the practices, can really help us kind of remain stable and balanced as we progress along the path, and we maybe don't feel so blindsided and confused and maybe a little bit alone when stuff does come up. Does that all make sense? Cool. Y'all ready for a break? I went on for a while. Thank you for your patience. So let's take about a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back and have a little bit of time for questions and meditation and closing prayers. And announcements, if anybody has announcements. So think about them now if you've got them. Oh, and then afterwards there's snacks and coffee and stuff too. So. We can't control other people, we know it. We can't make other people behave the way we want them to do. The only thing you can have any influence over, in a real sense, is your own mind. And that's why we try to cultivate these wholesome mind states, so that we can be loving and compassionate and empathetic all the time, like Amajimpa. So, yeah. Anything else? Yeah, Doug. Right, and it's hard to know when, yeah, exactly, when to like sit back and when to push back. I will say that Lama says the same thing. There's no obligation as a Buddhist to be a doormat. So as long as when you're having that exchange, it is coming from a conscious place, a place of no self, in a place of from compassion and from, you know, that right view, responding is appropriate because, I mean, of course, there has to be an exchange. So, yeah, I mean, like my experience, I definitely did not react from that place. So, yeah. I totally agree. It really can be hard to know. It's like just like where I'm at right now, what do I do? You know, do I have the skill at this moment to do this well? Right. You do. You need practice. And that's where it's good to like, you know, you can bring these kinds of things up with Lama Jinpa. And he'll say, well, you know, do this, do that, you know, and sometimes it's just little things like, oh my gosh, I can't even, I still am not great at it, but again, practice, you know, you just have to practice like taking that breath before you open your mouth, and if as you're taking that breath, the first word that pops into your mind is I, you probably shouldn't say anything, and give it a minute. And then behind Doug.
Yeah, how does equanimity apply to the action of you're talking about equanimity for every creature is but we constantly judge actions of the way because you have wrong, so how do we come around that contact?
Well, as a you're right. I mean, and again, because we're kind of talking about two views, two realms. There's like the conventional world that we all, you know, exist in, and you know, you drive around, and you know, you go to work, and you interact with other sentient beings on a daily basis. And then there's, of course, the ultimate world where there's just this state. So, we are having to remember that, yes, things are occurring. Events are occurring. Incidences are occurring where people are treating one another in different ways. I mean, you can see that, you know, wars are occurring. People are, you know, doing, you know, these bad things. People are doing these good things, you know, rescuing children out of caves in Thailand. You see all these things occurring. With equanimity, that refined state, again, you see those differences. You're interested in them, but you're not making judgments or assessments or having biases based on those things. You're simply seeing them as they are, and the state of equanimity simply is. It doesn't change. At the same time, we are generating very subtle compassion, very subtle empathy and sympathetic joy, so that when we see those very conventional things occurring, causing suffering, as bodhisattvas, we can take conscious, enlightened action to relieve those things. So, did that help or did it make it worse?
Okay.
It's not indifference. It is not indifference. Bodhisattvas are not indifferent. Indifference is a horrible boundary. It's not indifference. You're always interested. You're always interested. You're interested in what's happening to others. And you're interested in relieving the things that are bad that are happening and encouraging the good things. Absolutely. Anybody else? Let's do a very short meditation, and then we'll do closing prayers. Yeah. Yeah, if you'd like, that'd be fine. Thank you. Appreciate it. Did anyone think of any announcements? Yeah, it's going to go, all go to Goodwill. Oh. Yeah. And we really do, we like keep stuff, seriously, you guys, we keep stuff for like months. I mean, it's not like you're going to leave it this week, and it's, so it's like, yeah, it's all been here for a really long time, so.
I just want to, because the practice changes every week, the lunar practice this week will be on Thursday.
Yeah, Dirk very kindly leads quarter moon practices. In the evenings here at the Gumpa. It's a very powerful traditional practice, so we really appreciate him doing that.
We also have Lama Jinpa tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
You betcha. Yeah. Yeah, always good. He's always doing that. He does the first and third Monday evenings. So. If you are, if this talk intrigued you and you're kind of interested in exploring compassion practices, equanimity, things like that, more. The third Friday evening of every month, I run a Tonglen class and group where we actually do the Tonglen taking and sending meditation class and have discussion time and time to talk about subjects like equanimity and stuff too. And that's the third Friday evening of every month at 6. And then, of course, oh, were they? Sorry. Yes. Yeah. That'll be probably for a couple more years, my guess.
I don't know about that.
How far, what chapter are we on?
13, 14.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, maybe just another several months. Okay, great. Fantastic.
I'm excited for chapter 25.
They're all good chapters.
Yeah, they all are.
All right. Yeah, I have a... I take some medications that make me basically useless that much after like 6. So I try, and then it's very pathetic when I kind of start going midway through. So, all right. Well, then one last announcement, one that we always have to make. We are so glad you came, and of course you are the reason we're here. For those of you who are new, you may not know that Lion's Roar truly is a community-based organization. We everything we offer, every single one of our classes, groups, events, teachings, is offered at no charge to the public, and we depend entirely on the generosity of members and visitors, our Dharma brothers and sisters. So. If today you found helpful, we would just appreciate it if you could help spread the Dharma by leaving a donation in the box at the back. Any little tiny bit will do. And if you can't, that's good too. We're just glad you came and gave us your good energy. So, but yeah, we do everything kind of on a free of charge basis. So we appreciate the generosity of all our ongoing members and visitors and Dharma Rajas, all those people too. So. All right, let's go ahead and do closing prayers. And I believe those begin on page 15. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, that has not arisen, arise and grow. And may that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. May the teachings of the Buddha flourish, and may the upholders of the teachings remain forever. May all migrators achieve happiness, and may they fulfill all their temporary and ultimate goals. Losa, magical display of a deep awareness of all the victorious ones,
merciful giver of a stream of profound and vast instructions to the fortunate migrators, please remain always unperishing, unchanging, unfading. Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of objectless compassion, Manjushri, master of flawless wisdom, Vajrapani, destroyer of the entire host of Maras, Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the snowy land sages, Lhasang Drogpa, I make request at your holy feet. Om Aum. Thank you very much, everyone. So, as is traditional, at least at Lion's Roar, there are coffee, tea, snacks, goodies, fun in the back. Please, everybody, feel free to join us. I'll hang out here for a minute or two, but then I have to get back there before the coffee's all gone. So...